Hello, this is Margot of thechingonahomestead.com, and this is episode 5 of the Chingona Homesteader podcast. Well, there have been a lot of things going on here at the Chingona Homestead, and actually there's a lot of stuff going on today, and I'm not even sure if I'm going to be able to record because there are two crews of guys working on the bungalow right now. There's some stuff that needs to be fixed underneath the house. So there's some guys like sawing and banging away underneath the house. And then I have guys rebuilding or putting in new fencing on either side of me. So yeah, it's pretty busy. It's pretty loud. There's people knocking on my front door all day long. So we'll see if we can get through this. But I wanted to talk to you today about this. I want to talk to you about tiny houses. So the bungalow at the Chingona Homestead is not a tiny house. When we decided to downsize, and again, the house that we lived in before this was 2,200 square feet. I am not entirely sure of what the bungalow square footage is, although I'm pretty good at guesstimating square footage because of, you know, my career as an interior designer. I'm pretty good at it. But when I saw the house originally before we lived here, I thought, just my guess was that it was like 1,100 square feet. And even then I was like, wow, okay, it's going to be half the size. And once we moved in though, it became apparent very quickly that no, it's not even anywhere near 1,100 square. I think by my best guesstimate, how about that? That's a new word, guesstimate. My latest guesstimate is that we're somewhere between probably 800 to 850 square feet is what I think it actually is right now. I would be very surprised if it was 850. To be honest, I know it's not 900. There's no way that it's as much as 900 square feet. So not a tiny house, because if you know anything about tiny houses, they typically aren't more than 400-ish square feet. And many of them are 200 and under. And not that I have never lived in a place that small. I've actually lived in quite a few places that small. Many of us do. If you've ever, you know, those of us who are city mice, live in these things called apartments, which can be very, very small. I certainly, when I lived in the Boston area, you know, I lived in a couple of places there, and they were definitely, you know, 300 square feet-ish and under, around there. Our smallest place that my husband and I ever lived was our very first apartment in Manhattan that we lived on the Upper East Side. And that apartment, I'm pretty sure it was illegal, but it was like a nice apartment that it was a small apartment that somebody had divided into many even smaller apartments. And so that apartment was 112 square feet. That's with everything. That's with the kitchen. That's just the closet. That's the whole shebang was 112 square feet. I think it was like 16 feet long and like 7 feet wide, something like that. So smaller than even most tiny houses. And one of the good things, you know, there's a lot to be said for that experience. For the tiny house experience. One of the really awesome things about it is that it really forces you to live in your community. So because we were living in this eensy little shoebox, we arrived in New York City. This was our first apartment in New York City. We arrived in New York City and we really took advantage of every resource that we had available to you. And we were young and broke. And so we did all the free, you know, we went to Central Park. We walked and walked and walked. We lived on the Upper East Side, which was quite a swanky. We had a crappy apartment in a swanky neighborhood. And the good thing about that was there was a lot of celebrity spotting to be done. So we would just go walking and long walks until we spotted somebody just for fun. Museums, window shopping. And so we got to know our neighbors. And so living in a tiny house, in an urban environment, at least, really forces you to interact with your neighbors in a way that I think the tiny house, like the way that we think of the tiny house movement today, is of people kind of going off the grid and being out in the middle of nowhere. And I would think that that experience would force you then to really interact with the land that you are on, which is fantastic. So I've had a little bit of that experience here, but this house, the bungalow here at the Chigona Homestead, is palatial compared to that. But there's a lot to be said for living in a smaller house. I would call it a small house. My neighbors call it a tiny house. They still are fascinated by the fact that four people live in what to them is a shed. We are forever answering questions about like how we managed to all fit in here. It's not that hard. There's quite a lot of space. But anyway, living smaller has a lot of advantages. I think for me, the pros way outweigh the cons. And so the house is small but not tiny. The land, however, the usable land that we can plant on here at the homestead is definitely, I think, by any stretch of the imagination, definitely tiny. And coming up in the next segment, we're going to talk about maxing out your farming space, if any. You may be an apartment dweller, and I don't know why you're listening to this. If you are, that's great. That's awesome. And if you are, oh my gosh, I hope you get in touch with me and let me know how you're managing to do homesteading in an apartment. I'm really fascinated by that idea. But anyway, in the next segment, we're going to talk about maxing out the land, the tiny farmland that we have here at the Chigona Homestead, and the process that we're going through in doing that. And here's a hint: it involves asking for help. So we'll talk about that in the next segment of the Chingona Homestead. Stay tuned. So we knew when we moved to the bungalow that we wanted to try growing food. I think it was my husband's idea, now that I'm thinking about it. That doesn't sound so hard, except that I am someone who has always had an electromagnetic touch of death for plants. I've never been able to sustain even the humblest of plants. And so that meant I needed to learn some stuff. I couldn't just go to the nursery and like buy a bunch of starts and like shove them in the ground, and I knew that much, like that was not going to work. And so I knew that I would need some help. So I spent a while reading a lot of books. I read a lot of books about urban farming and about gardening in general. One book that I really loved that helped me a lot was called Square Foot Gardening. It's kind of a good reference book to have around all the time. There have been many, many editions over the years. It's pretty inexpensive to find. Your library probably has it. And I watched a lot of videos, and over the course of this podcast, I'll be recommending podcasts and videos and all kinds of stuff to you. But I also knew that that can only take you so far. It's hard to go from a book or even a YouTube video and leap into your yard in your city, whatever city that is, and decide how you're going to set up a farm. Like, this is really, that's a huge leap to do by yourself, I think. And so I was extremely fortunate. I found total fluke. I was buying a cactus for my front steps. That's another long story for another time. Basically, I had neighbors that were, well, like I said in the last segment, when you live in a small place in an urban environment, whether it's an apartment or a small house like the bungalow, one of the good slash not good things about that is that forces or compels you to interact with other humans who live around you, And most of the time, I have to say, it's really great. But because this is a very neighborhoody kind of neighborhood, some neighbors have trouble understanding boundaries. And so that means, like, you know, if I'm trimming my front hedge, people will like stop me and be like, who are you? Like people I don't know who live in the neighborhood. Well, who are you? What are you doing here? How long have you been here? What do you, blah, blah, blah. What do you do? What does your husband do? Asking very personal questions sometimes. Or they might just walk up to the front door and try and like peep through the window for real. A lot of my neighbors like to do that. So now we have a security system in place. but also one of the things that I did, and this is, here's an idea. One of the things that I did, because I noticed some of my other neighbors did this, is that I went and I bought cactus and I put it on my front porch in front of the windows where people were wanting to peep. So from the sidewalk, you see the cactus and you go like, oh, no, I'm not going to go up there. It looks really scary. And so it's amazing how effective doing that one little thing was. Cause they can't necessarily see like the security camera or anything like that, but they can sure see a spiky cactus. So anyway, I was buying cactus, and in that experience, I met a young man who is, what shall we call him? A consultant farmer. He specializes in growing food, and he's helped set up lots of mostly commercial places with sustainable farms, like for restaurants and so on. And so I actually had pictures of my little strip of awful, awful, dusty soil. my little, like, it's, what did I say it was? It's like, it's maybe if we max it out, it's maybe like, maybe we can get 120 square feet of land, usable land to work with. So I showed him that and he was like, oh, I would love to help you with that. And so I paid him to come and rehabilitate my soil. He's putting in an irrigation system. And more importantly, he's teaching me and my kids and my husband how to maintain this and what he's doing. Like with every step, he's showing us what he's doing, telling us why he's doing it, how it works, what do we do? You know, how do we fix it ourselves if it breaks? What kind of stuff is going to work in what spot and what isn't going to work in what spot. And like I said, you know, and because I had studied, you know, what I had studied in books and videos and that, I was able to pick it up pretty easily. But I really, at least for me, I know myself, I don't think I could have just like read and studied videos enough to just be able to hit the ground running. And like, I would have thought that, because our soil was really old and dry and, extremely compacted, this property, there was a store on this property and, where the soil is that we're farming, there was a lot of foot traffic through there. So all the years of people walking back and forth, that soil was like concrete. And so I would have thought, bring in a tiller. You need a tiller, obviously. And he was like, oh, don't bring a tiller. So he tilled, if you want to say, tilled the soil, but he did it by hand and he showed me how he did it. So anyway, it was a much richer experience and extremely, it's like, you know, what do they say about teaching a man to fish instead of just giving him the fish? So we're paying this young man to teach us how to fish as he is setting all of this up for us. And it's just been so worth the investment. I can't even tell you. So we have this little tiny farm. Now, so far, we only have about a third of it planted. Although with the plan of how it's laid out is coming together, it's almost done with, so we almost know exactly what's going to go where, but only about a third of it actually has stuff growing, and already we are harvesting food. And so here is where I make the case for not, ever putting in a lawn again. A lawn is like a bad friend. You know, like it looks good to other people, but in terms of your relationship to it, like you're doing all the giving and the lawn is doing all the taking, and you know, you're losing your time, you're losing your weekends, you're losing your money, you're losing your water, and that's costing you more money. And you know, who has a perfect lawn? Like how much money, you know, how much money goes into making a perfect lawn? And especially like where I live in California, where we're very drought prone, it's just a terrible idea to have a lawn. And it would be as hard, you know, given this yucky little strip of land that we had to work with, it would be as hard, if not harder, to maintain a lawn than to have a farm, a tiny farm. And our tiny farm, even though we've only, you know, planted a third of it, like I said, we have already gotten so much in terms of education, in terms of fun, in terms of time together as a family, and we are already harvesting food. It is already feeding us, which is amazing. So, if I may make the case for tiny farms, and I can see how the tiny farm movement could explode like the tiny house movement has done. Because if the average American lives in a 2,500 square foot home, that to me doesn't say, well, that comes, you know, with acreage, of course. No, I think if the average American home these days is 2,500 square feet, what that says to me, especially as someone who had a career designing homes for years and years, what that says to me is that your home, like our last home, which was 2,200 square feet, your home is maxed out on the lot that it is on, you know, meaning you have sacrificed land to have a larger house. And so what are you going to do with that land that you do have? And how can you make it work for you? So, yeah, so that's my little soapbox spiel. We'll be talking more about this idea of tiny farming, and then there's a whole like thing about watering. I use a lot of, it's not completely irrigated with gray water, but it is about half irrigated with gray water, our tiny farm, and that has been extremely helpful too. So we'll talk more about that in upcoming episodes of the Chingona Homesteader. The next episode, though, is going to be a short one. I'm just going to be talking about my pressure cooker and how I use it here at the Chingona Homestead. If you want to follow me on social media, all of my social media handles are at She's Nacho Mama, SHESNACHOMAMA. My blog is thechingonahomestead.com. And if you would like to email me, if you have, for instance, products you would like me to review or topics you would like to hear about here on the Chingona Homesteader podcast, or if you are someone who is homesteading, I would love to hear about your experience. You can email me at She's Nacho Mama. Again, it's SHESNACHOMAMA @gmail.com. And be sure and check out my other podcasts, Book Versus Movie, Did I Just Eat That Out Loud, and Resisting Bitch Face. The Chingona Homesteader podcast is a Bungalows production. And I will be back soon talking about pressure cookers. Talk to you then. Bye.